And welcome to One Land, Many Voices. I'm William Seaman, and with me is my co-host, Hala Gores. Good morning, Hala.
Good morning, Will, and good morning to our listeners.
We are going to be talking about Gaza today. We have a very special guest. We're going to go to him very soon. But we also want to talk about some other events coming up here in Portland. So get a pen and paper to write down some important dates and times. This is a focus on Gaza this morning in a somewhat abbreviated version of One Land, Many Voices this morning. We're going to be transitioning at about 9:45 this morning. So we want to go right to our guest. But first, what is happening this Saturday that people need to know about, Hala?
So that would be tomorrow. At Portland State University is an all-day event starting at 10 a.m., ending at 5. Palestine, 40 years of occupation, 60 years of dispossession. A day of education and solidarity. This event is going to be at Hoffman Hall, which is located at Southwest Harrison and 11th Avenue at Portland State University. We will have a keynote address by Dr. Rashid Khalidi. We're really lucky to be able to get him in Portland. He is the Edward Said Professor of Arab Studies at the Middle East Institute of Columbia University in New York City. Dr. Khalidi will talk about the Palestinian struggle for statehood. He's author of many scholarly articles and books on various aspects of Middle East history and politics. We will have available at that event his most recent book, The Iron Cage, The Story of the Palestinian Struggle for Statehood. Throughout the day, there will be documentary films shown, including realities on the ground, and If Americans Knew, as well as Palestine is Waiting. At 4 p.m., we will have Peace, Propaganda, and the Promised Land. It's almost a one-hour film. There will be exhibits of historic UN photos on the walls. These are photographs that I had seen recently, and they are really quite tremendous in showing what happened to the Palestinians in 1967. In May of next year, we will focus on the Al-Nakba, the 60 years of dispossession, the catastrophe. But for tomorrow, folks, from 10 to 5, please join us at Hoffman Hall at Portland State University.
And we have that incredible lecture with Rashid Khalidi, and that's at 2 p.m.
at
Hoffman Hall at PSU.
That's at 2, and he's going to also spend a lot of time after his lecture taking your questions, so please join us.
Please join us tomorrow. The other event that is a very important event, especially for people living in Portland, is a march against the raids. This is a march and rally in support of immigrant rights. Folks heard about this very dramatic and very frightening raid by the ICE folks. These are the immigration enforcement folks here in the United States, dislocating hundreds of people here in the Portland area, separating families, disrupting caregivers for children. This was a devastating raid at a Del Monte plant here in Portland, and there is a rally at 2 p.m. On Sunday, June 24th. That's Sunday, 2 p.m. at the ICE building. That's the Immigration Enforcement Building at 511 Northwest Broadway here in Portland. That's right near the main post office at Hoyt and Broadway in Northwest Portland. Please come out at 2 p.m. on Sunday for that very important rally in support of immigrant rights, in support of basic civil and human rights here in Portland. Now, our guest today to begin our discussion of Gaza is Professor Bashir Abu Mene. He is a professor of English at Barnard College in Manhattan. He received his degree from Haifa, University of Haifa, and his PhD, his doctorate in English literature at Oxford. He teaches courses in global literature, Palestinian and Israeli literatures, Marxism and post-colonialism. He's an author. He writes articles for Monthly Review, Z Magazine, and The Nation Magazine. A recent article, which is an interesting link with our speaker on Saturday, Professor Khalidi, our guest today wrote a very interesting review article, In Palestine, A Dream Deferred, which appeared in the December 18th issue of Nation Magazine. Professor Abu Mene, thank you for joining us this morning.
Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, thank you for joining us. And we're going to be talking about what I think has been a very confusing situation as it has unfolded in Gaza in the last week and a half, and that is, of course, essentially the routing of the what has been the ruling party, the Fatah party in Gaza, by Hamas. Essentially, Gaza has been taken over by Hamas. And as the events have unfolded very quickly, the United States is renewing aid to the Palestinian Authority under Abu Mazen, Mahmoud Abbas. There are moves in the UN which have so far been blocked to recognize this new emergency government. I wonder if you could help us begin to understand this emergency situation, this crisis emerging in Gaza today.
Well, basically, the situation has been described as effectively as a military coup. Now, Hamas, of course, denies it. Hamas says that this was a necessary step and that it had to be done, and their hands were forced, and that by taking over the PA security institutions and some of the other institutions in Gaza, they're effectively putting aside the stumbling blocks for Palestinian unity and conciliation. So for Hamas, this move has been, as part of the logic of the unity government, this move was for the sake of Palestinian unity and conciliation. Of course, within the Palestinian context, all the parties effectively came out against the move. All the parties were very worried by Hamas's security military takeover of Gaza, including all the left parties, including effectively as well Islamic Jihad, which didn't advocate the move. They were worried about the use of force in Palestinian politics and effective militarization of Palestinian politics. They were all extremely aware that there was a problem in Gaza and that the problem goes by the name of Dahlan, and that Dahlan is effectively an American-supported stream within Fatah, Abbas's Fatah, protected by Abbas, and that he's been accumulating arms, that he's been accumulating support, that people have been let in by Israel into the Gaza Strip, have been trained by the Americans in order to effectively, right, this is the claim, to perform a coup against the elected Hamas government in Gaza. So Hamas says that it was responding for a coup in preparation. This as well has been also verified by many other sources. Now the question is, it tried to resolve a stumbling block, a major stumbling block in the unity government deal that was achieved in Mecca, in Saudi Arabia. The stumbling block was mainly over security matters. Who controls the security services in the Palestinian territories? The debate, the discussion, the conflict, the tension was between the government on the one hand and the Hamas government, elected democratically by majority, and Fatah and Abbas's group and the preventive security apparatus. Abbas wanted to maintain control over the security apparatus, while the unity government said that we should hand over control to the independent minister. This was part of the unity deal, Al-Qawasmi, who will control all security matters, who is an independent, non-Hamas, non-Fatah figure. As this deal kicked in, what transpired on the ground was that Dahlan constantly undermined and marginalized this figure until he got fed up completely and resigned. This is the immediate result of Hamas's action, is the immediate result of this specific resignation. This is the immediate context for the conflict, which, again, Hamas decided to resolve by force. So it effectively took over Gaza. But after it took over Gaza, it gave many different and important statements saying that they are interested in dialogue, that they are interested in conciliation, that they are interested in fortifying the unity government. All these things have been brushed aside by Abbas. Abbas took the move as an attack on him and his authority, even though Hamas explicitly said that it wasn't against his authority, it was only against this very specific stream within Fatah, this American-supported stream within Fatah. Many Fatah members, grassroots members, were sympathetic towards the move because people were completely fed up with the lawlessness that the Dahlan group was instituting inside Gaza. As you can see now, in the last couple of days, if you read the reports coming out of Gaza, people say that Gaza has been the safest and most secure for as far as they can remember. This is the irony of what happened. But nonetheless, this caused a severe political crisis in Palestinian politics. All the other factions stood against Hamas, and the political implications for Hamas have been that this is effectively a strategic mistake, that they have been negative for Hamas. Hamas now is completely isolated within Gaza. Abbas dissolved the government, instituted an emergency government, and has effectively marginalized Hamas even further.
Professor, if I could step back a little bit. Regarding Dahlan, I have heard Palestinians refer to him as the Palestinian Shalabi. Shalabi, of course, was the American darling in Iraq. He was supposed to come in and take over Iraq. What evidence is there that Dahlan was working to undermine Hamas and the security in Gaza?
And I wonder also if you could give us a little bit of an intro to who this man is, because I think many of our listeners just don't know who Dahlan is.
Dahlan is effectively the main PA security figure supported by Hamas. He's the head of all the security services.
Opposed by Hamas, supported by Fatah?
Yeah, supported by Abbas Fatah. He's been involved in the Palestinian struggle before the Second Intifada, and then was returned after Oslo, came back with Abbas, and was effectively responsible for the suppression of Hamas in 94. So he has a very long history. Him and the people around him, Abu Shabak, who was forced to resign today by Abbas, were actively involved in suppressing Hamas during the Oslo period under Arafat's order. Dahlan was always seen by the Americans as their man in Gaza, somebody Bush called somebody we could work with. So he's seen as a putschist, somebody who's not interested in unity, not interested in conciliation, somebody who is only interested in using the logic of force. He's not a very popular figure at all. He also said when Hamas won the elections, he would do everything to decimate Hamas. This is the logic he used. He would work against the unity government, even after the signing of the unity agreement in Mecca. So very divisive influence. The question is why Abbas gives him and grants him so much power. This is a very serious question, because Hamas saw itself, when it went against Dahlan, as only going against this very stream within Palestinian politics. It didn't see itself as going against Abbas's authority. It continued to say that Abbas is the legitimate president of the Palestinian Authority, that it respects whatever Abbas does, that they're only targeting Dahlan. Abbas's response has been actually quite catastrophic. Having targeted Dahlan, Hamas having targeted Dahlan, Abbas effectively went out against Hamas and gave what I think, when I heard the speech 2 days ago, was effectively a declaration of war against Hamas. To all intents and purposes, saying that Hamas needs to be frozen out, that there will be no dialogue with Hamas, that there's nothing to talk about, that these are putschist people. He referred to Gaza as the dark princelet, the dark area, the black area. This is part of an ongoing crisis in Palestinian politics.
Now, one aspect of this is there have been moves over the last several days against Hamas personnel and against Hamas institutions in the West Bank. So the potential for an expansion of this conflict, and yet there's also statements from Hamas personnel saying this is a very risky business on the part of the Palestinian Authority, Abbas, and that this could that they argue that, or they claim that Hamas is much stronger than is realized in the West Bank. What do you think? What are the prospects of this conflict exploding in the West Bank as well?
I think politically the Palestinian public is effectively by majority supported Hamas in the elections. It wasn't a vast majority, it was a significant majority. So effectively you have a clear division within the Palestinian public. I would doubt that Fatah would continue to attack Hamas in the West Bank. There's a serious problem for Hamas, of course, in the West Bank, is that even though they have political support, militarily they're not powerful at all. Not because of what Fatah does, but effectively because of what the Israelis do. Israelis walk in and out of the West Bank on a daily basis, kidnapping, killing militants, and undermining any kind of resistance, not only Hamas's resistance from the West Bank. So that the PA is extremely powerful in the West Bank. What this causes, effectively, and some people have been talking about it in Haaretz and some Palestinian commentators as well, is that this creates a situation where you have effectively what they acutely called, I think it's a very wrong way of describing things, but a free state solution. So you have Hamas politically separated off in Gaza, running Gaza on its own, providing security, what have you, being completely sealed off and isolated from the rest of the world. There's problems of how it will pay salaries, whether the PA Abbas will pay the salaries of the PA in Gaza Strip, whether people should go to work or not. People on this front are very confused. The other side of it is that Abbas and his law will control the West Bank, or the part of the West Bank that Palestinians control, which are effectively only 50% of the West Bank. The other 50% Palestinians don't have access to. And that Israel will be there controlling everybody, effectively, and not allowing anybody to go in and out, neither of Gaza nor of the West Bank. And this will come to be called a three-state solution, or one Israeli commentator called it the five-state solution, because Palestinians effectively live in Bantustans in the West Bank and Gaza. But what it means politically is that there's now a very strong political separation between Hamas and Fatah, and that this constitutes a severe crisis. In the last 1.5 years, this is actually the major crisis between Fatah and Hamas. This, I mean, looking at Abbas's immediate behavior, one can see how it was a kind of a present for Abbas, because Abbas just jumped on the wagon. Abbas has been becoming a complete irrelevance politically for the last half year, unable to do anything, unable to achieve anything with the Israelis, because the Israelis are effectively not interested in diplomacy, not interested in settling the conflict, unable to achieve anything with the Americans. And suddenly, he gets this strategic blunder by Hamas. So now he regained political momentum. And for the moment, I don't think this will lead anywhere in terms of what the Palestinians will be getting from Israel at all. But for the moment, in the next couple of months or a couple of weeks, he will look as if he's doing things. But whether he can achieve real material improvement for the Palestinians is the real question. Whether he can effectively end, in the speech he gave, he said, we need to stop the wall as well. Well, you know, the PA has done very little against the wall. All the organizations against the wall have been non-violent Palestinian grassroots organizations. The PA has been effectively a capitulationist in its relationship to the Israelis. This is why people like Hamas rise and become very popular, because they advocate a nationalist agenda of resisting the Israeli occupation. This crisis is not going to go away. So there's a contradiction between the occupation, Israeli colonialism, and this diplomacy that reaches nowhere and that leaves the Palestinians suffering even more is there. Now, depending who will utilize, will the Palestinians organize themselves? Will Hamas do something political, i.e. less military, using more political means than means of force, is an open question. Will the Palestinians themselves organize themselves? I think that's the most important question at the moment. 75% of Palestinians now advocate elections. They want elections. They blame, very importantly, they blame both sides for the current crisis. They don't just say this is a Hamas problem or a Fatah problem. 60% of them say that this is a problem for both Hamas and that both Hamas and Fatah led to. So there's a sense in which people are looking for an alternative to both some of the problems that Hamas was incapable of resolving, and the Oslo project, which has been effectively a complete capitulation and has led to more suffering and misery for the Palestinians.
Professor, we should let our callers know that they can call and ask you questions at 503-231-8187. I'd like to focus on the 1.5 million people living in Gaza. They have been strangled, choked off financially in many different ways. The question I have is if under Hamas, they are going to get less violence now, better security. How will they survive financially? Because the EU, the U.S. Is not willing to continue aid under Hamas, and the Israeli government is continuing to withhold the tax funds.
Well, the problem in Gaza is that you have, as a result of what Israel does on a daily basis, sealing off the West Bank, cutting it off completely, between 70 and 80% unemployment, unprecedented rates of poverty in the West Bank, and effectively the majority of people living on food dependency, UN handouts, and such. That crisis will deepen. There is no way people continue to talk about the humanitarian ways of dealing with Gaza, i.e. that they will not let the Palestinians completely starve, but they will let them starve just a little bit, just to keep the situation under control. There will be no massive change in Palestinian livelihood as a result of the Hamas takeover. The only thing that will improve, and has been improving in the last week, is the security situation. There is no lawlessness, at all. People are not walking around with guns anymore. Hamas is taking care of that. And you have a sense of security. And that's important for the Palestinians. But the other situation, whether it will improve or not, will depend on the relationship with the West Bank, the relationship with the PA, and whether they'll be able to transform the relationship with Israel. For the moment, nothing looks, it looks as if it's going to continue in the same way.
I want to remind folks that they're listening to One Land, Many Voices, and you're tuned to KBOO, listener-sponsored community radio, 90.7. FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge, and naturally also available as streaming audio at KBOO's website, www.kboo.org. And our guest this morning, talking about the crisis in Gaza and beyond, is Professor Bashir Abu Menneh, who is a professor of English at Barnard College in New York, and also publishes in Z Magazine, The Nation Magazine, and Monthly Review, among other places. Professor Abu Menneh, you mentioned what's the umbrella for this entire crisis, which is, of course, the ongoing occupation, the Israeli occupation of the West Bank and Gaza. And one of the comments that that has been in the analysis of this crisis has been that this conflict, this escalation of the conflict between Hamas and Fatah highlights the what is essentially the powerlessness of the Palestinian Authority, that it is, in a sense, gives a lie to this pretense that Oslo continues in some meaningful way, that the Palestinian Authority has some power in the West Bank and Gaza. And the suggestion is that somehow this will eventually lead to a complete collapse of the Palestinian Authority and some kind of reemergence of the overt presence of the Israeli occupation. And I'm wondering if you see that as a possible outcome, and that the confrontation with the Israeli occupation will again revert to a kind of a pre-Oslo state.
I think for the moment I would doubt it. For the moment I would doubt it. The way Oslo has been good for Israel in the sense in which it allowed the Israeli IDF to move out of the main towns. It also effectively, through the checkpoint system, cuts off Palestinians from each other so that the population can be controlled without the immediate presence of soldiers within the town, which was a significant difference from the second intifada, between the second intifada and the first intifada. The first intifada, people could engage with the army because it was around them, it was in the town. The situation now is much more difficult. The Israel surrounds villages, surrounds towns, and people don't even have access to the Israelis in any kind of way. So I don't think that the Israelis are interested in controlling hands-on the West Bank and Gaza. This is a good situation for them in the sense that they are there to protect the settlements, effectively, which are illegal by international law. They are there to bolster the wall, which is there to protect the settlements. They are there to build Jewish-only bypass roads, again, to link up the settlements to each other and to link the settlements to Israel. But they're not there to control the population. That's what the PA is for, so that the Oslo arrangement has been absolutely beneficial to Israel and absolutely unbeneficial for the Palestinians. This is the main factor in Oslo. The main factor is that the PA would control security matters in the West Bank and Gaza. This is why it's such a decisive stumbling block between Hamas and Fatah. This is where the power lies, within Oslo and Oslo institutions, right? So this is, I doubt that Israel would want to move back in. No, and I doubt whether the Palestinians would declare the end of the PA for the moment. There are some voices in Palestine saying we might as well declare the end of the PA and invite the Israelis back in. I don't think that these are hypothetical issues for the moment. It doesn't seem as if they're going to materialize on the ground.
I wonder if we could turn to what are some potential progressive alternatives? What then is maybe a more optimistic view of potential changes coming out of this crisis? Now, I'd like to talk about that, but I also want to sort of pose a challenge to this whole framework of understanding that is dominating the news reporting around this issue here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And that is, of course, in a sense, the view that was embraced by Abu Mazen in this recent statement, that Hamas is a terrorist organization and refuses to recognize the legitimacy of the state of Israel. And how do you respond to that characterization of Hamas, that it really it would be a capitulation to terrorism and to the to evil incarnate were the United States or Israel to finally speak with, actually talk with the Hamas leadership?
So this is the sad thing about the Palestinian president, is that sometimes he speaks in an American language. And when he calls a Palestinian group a terrorist group, which is supported by 50% of his own population, what is he saying about his own people? It's a very difficult statement to stomach. It's completely unrealistic. Hamas has been the major factor in the founding of Hamas and bringing it into being was the resistance to the occupation. Without the occupation, there will be no Hamas. There wasn't Hamas up until 1987, until the first Intifada. Hamas is a clear factor to the Israeli occupation. So to say that people who are there to safeguard their national rights, to defend their people from aggression, from colonialism, from violation, people who are there supported completely by international law. Israel is in violation of all the tenets of international law in Palestine. It occupies, it denies freedom of movement. All of the countries around the world agree on that. Of course, other than the U.S., a significant country because it holds, is the only remaining superpower which protects Israel from this international consensus. So there is no sense in which it is the Palestinians who are terrorists and the Israelis are innocently being targeted by the Palestinians. This is not to say that Palestinians don't use terrorism. Absolutely, they do. They send in suicide bombings every once in a while when life becomes intolerable, when there's nothing else to do, when they continue to see Israel violating their rights, when they continue to see Israel assassinating its leaders, assassinating a lot of the Hamas leadership, assassinating its militants, building walls, building settlements, suffocating them, cutting them off from any kind of decent livelihood. That remains for them one of the few options to resist. It's also extremely problematic, but one has to understand these things in their context. So to claim that Hamas is a terrorist organization is to say that any resistance to occupation is terrorist, and that's completely history stands against this statement.
Professor, in fact, under Fatah, there were operations against Israel in which Israeli civilians were...
And there still are.
Yes, there still are.
The brigade has adopted all the tactics that the Hamas has, including suicide bombings, and what tactics that are usually called terrorists, targeting some of the settlers in the West Bank and Gaza, not the armed ones, not the ones who participate with the armies, but women and children. All of these things have been done by other factions.
So why the double standard? The double standard against Hamas?
Well, you see, it's ironic. I mean, American policy in the Middle East is... Americans are regretting democracy in Palestine. They're regretting. Many of them believe that they should have listened to the Israelis and not allowed for the elections to happen, because elections give you representation of what people want. And what people want is to be free from occupation. What people want is to be free from American dependency, from American intervention, from American interference. And, of course, America finds it very difficult to accommodate with that, which is why, predominantly, it finds it very easy to work with authoritarian regimes. All the regimes, all the big American allies in the region, Saudi Arabia, the Arab allies, Jordan, Egypt, are non-democratic regimes. If you had democracy, there wouldn't be any Arab-American alliance. That's the tragedy for the U.S. So it was stuck in a kind of contradiction between its rhetoric, saying that we promote democracy, and between the situation on the ground. And it thought it can be adventurous and hope for a Fatah win in the 2006 election. That didn't materialize. Hamas won. And that's part of the crisis that the Americans dug themselves into. But to say that the Americans are interested in democracy is just everything that they're doing now shows that they're not. Supporting Abbas now. When Abbas, just to give you a small example, under Arafat, the U.S. was trying to bolster the government, which was led by Abbas, trying to have the government control the security services, which was led by Abbas, against Arafat. Now, Abbas is president. It's doing everything against the government, which is Hamas-led and Hamas-elected, to prop up Abbas. So there's no really consistency in policy. The only consistent aspect of policy is that you work with the people who serve your interests in the region. And Abbas has effectively served American interests in the region. The Americans have done nothing for the Palestinians. They have made the situation much worse than it was before by intervening. Every couple of weeks you get, or months you get, Condoleezza Rice coming over to Israel, speaking about one or two roadblocks that Olmert also speaks about, and then Condoleezza Rice leaves, the roadblocks are still there. There are actually 546 illegal roadblocks in the West Bank now, condemned by the World Bank. Nothing happens to improve the lives of the Palestinians, and importantly, nothing happens to institute international law in the West Bank. Everything that Israel does in the West Bank, including the wall, 700 kilometers of it, the settlements, 450,000 settlers, all of them are illegal. According to international law, they should be dismantled, and they should go back to Israel. What America does actively supports the status quo and actively rejects Palestinian rights and supports the violation of Palestinian rights on a daily basis. So one can't say that the Americans are interested in peace. The American administration has done everything to get to the situation of crisis and catastrophe, ongoing catastrophe for the Palestinians that we have now. So to expect the Palestinians to be grateful, or to expect the Palestinians to not to vote against people who are American supported in Palestine, is just completely bizarre.
Professor Abu Meneh, in terms of, you mentioned how Palestinians are disaffected with both Fatah and Hamas.
Yeah.
Do you see political trends within the broader population that could result in significant changes to the character of leadership in Fatah, or for that matter Hamas, that would send those organizations in a direction more of unity, or in a direction of genuine resistance to the in terms of Fatah, in genuine resistance to the occupation, that that would be a more promising line of resistance?
Let's take the situation in Fatah, for example. The situation in Fatah is that you have an elite constituted by Abbas, Dahlan, and some of the another very important figure in Ramallah, who constitute the Fatah elite, who are interested in basically accepting whatever Israel gives them. Right? And you have the grassroots Fatah, who are actively resisting the Israeli occupation in the West Bank and Gaza, and considered nationalist and have popular support, like Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. The problem is that Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade within Fatah never, ever does things against Abbas. So as a result of this crisis with Hamas, they didn't side with Hamas against Dahlan, who a lot of them hate, and a lot of them are happy to be rid of, but they had to side with Abbas. So within Fatah, I doubt whether there'll be a clear alternative coming out and very clearly saying, uniting with the conciliatory political factions with Hamas and uniting the resistance and struggle against the Israeli occupation. What one would hope to see is that the 60% who has problems with both Hamas and Fatah, that organizes itself somehow. That's what one would hope. The closest the Palestinians have ever gotten to decolonizing the West Bank and Gaza was in the First Intifada, which was a popular grassroots, civilian-led uprising against the occupation. That's the closest they ever got to that. One would hope that the kinds of institutions that are created that were active in the First Intifada come back again. That is a significant hope. But the conditions now are much worse than they were before. See, Palestinians are cut off from each other, not only from Israel. Before, in the First Intifada, Palestinians could work in Israel. Now they can't even work in Israel. They can't even go from one village to another without bumping into an Israeli checkpoint. They can't go from one town to another. Jerusalem has been completely out of bounds for most Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza. You can't go from the West Bank to Gaza, from Gaza to the West Bank. You know, this is a system that makes it absolutely terrible for the Palestinians to try to organize anything. So you get a situation of desperation where suicide bombings become, people support suicide bombings because all their capabilities, their capacities to resist the occupation have been depleted by what I would call Israel's colonial siege, which has been active and effective since Oslo. Oslo instituted for the Palestinians a colonial siege. What you have now in the last 1.5 years is a situation even worse than that. You have, and I can quote John Dugard for you, the UN rapporteur on human rights in the West Bank, who said that in effect, this is a direct quote, the Palestinian people have been subjected to economic sanctions, the first time unoccupied people have been so treated. They have been subjected to possibly the most rigorous form of international sanctions imposed in modern times. And of course, and these are people whose rights are violated. There are no sanctions, of course, against Israel, the violator. Nobody does anything to punish the Israelis. Let me just give you a small example. Israel, as a result of trying to effect a regime change in the West Bank and Gaza after Hamas's election victory, effectively rounded up and imprisoned a third of the democratically elected legislative assembly.
It is difficult.
Now languish in Israeli prison. A third of it. Imagine if you had a situation where Hamas would imprison a third of the Knesset. What would happen in the world? What would people say? Right? This is the double standards and the immorality of the international community that we're dealing with. You can do it to the Palestinians, it's fine. Because that's what Israel is allowed to do to the Palestinians. But nothing can be done to the Israelis. There are no sanctions against Israel. Nothing is done to harm the Israelis. In fact, 2 days ago, the U.S. reported a $3 billion military support, $3 billion in the next year for Israel. Israel is constantly propped up, helped and supported, and the Palestinians are constantly punished for being occupied. Right? This is the absurd situation the Palestinians live in.
Professor, we've been hearing BBC reports that suggest that the Hamas takeover in Gaza is like the Taliban taking over in Afghanistan. Can you address that?
Well, Hamas is not the Taliban. Hamas is a popularly elected, democratically elected government. It has the support of a vast majority of the Palestinians. It's simply not Taliban. Hamas is not interested in targeting Americans, is not interested in targeting Israelis around the world. Hamas is only interested in ending the occupation. Hamas has given the Israelis and the Americans, from the beginning, from the first moment they were elected, hundreds of signs that they are interested in settling for a two-state solution, i.e. according to the international consensus, i.e. they will end everything, all resistance, all operations, and settle with the Israelis if Israel abides by the international consensus and withdraws from the West Bank and Gaza. This is not a terrorist organization. A terrorist organization would not do that. Terrorist organizations would go bomb innocent civilians just for the sake of instilling fear and insecurity. Hamas doesn't do that. Hamas has a very clear political aim in mind. It's a nationalist Palestinian aim. It's the aim of the PLO, which it abandoned in 1993. This is what the PLO stood for until the signing of the Oslo deal and Fatah's capitulation. So effectively, Hamas is just carrying on the PLO program. Before, when Fatah was carrying on the PLO program, they were called terrorists. That's just the way people talk. Just the way the elite describes people it's against. But there are distinctions to be made between the usage of terrorists. There are absolutely no way of comparing Al-Qaeda, who are terrorists, Taliban, some of the things they do with Hamas. Hamas is a popular anti-colonial force. The end of colonialism will be the end of Hamas.
And it's interesting that a large secular segment of Palestinians also support Hamas.
Absolutely.
Now we are listening to, we have as our special guest today, Professor Bashir Abu Meneh. And we are coming up to the end of our abbreviated program this morning. Coming up next, we have interviews with the parents of Rachel Corey and a dramatic reading from the play of Rachel Corey's life and death, and a discussion of Muslim organizing within the United States. I want to thank our guest this morning for a very interesting discussion. We hope our listeners have enjoyed this, and we hope you tune in next month for One Land, Many Voices. Professor Abu Meneh, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And we do want to remind folks of this very important lecture tomorrow, Saturday, with Rashid Khalidi at 2 p.m. in Hoffman Hall on the Portland State University campus, and as well as other events that Hala is going to talk about now.
Yes, this will be the marking of the beginning of the 40 years of occupation of the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem. As Will said, this will be at Hoffman Hall at Portland State University, which is located at Southwest Harrison and 11th Avenue. Professor Rashid Khalidi is an expert in on the Middle East and Palestinian-Israeli conflict. He will give the keynote address at 2 o'clock. There will also be an exhibit of historic UN photos The program will go from 10 to 5, and there will be also a sale of Palestinian handicrafts and fair trade goods, such as organic olive oil, embroidery, olive wood carvings, to support Palestinian craftspersons and farmers. We hope to see you there, and especially come on by at 2 o'clock to ask Dr. Rashid Khalidi questions. Thank you.
And again, please come out this Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Immigration Building at 511 Northwest Broadway. That's near the main post office at Hoyt and Broadway for a protest, a march against the raids, support immigrant rights here in Portland. Thank you for listening to One Land, Many Voices. If you didn't hear all of the program and you want to hear this in streaming video or streaming audio, go to our website at pdxjustice.org. That's pdxjustice.org, and you can listen to this program as streaming audio. Thank you for listening this morning.